From Bright Umbrella, this is Control Click Cast. We inspect the web for you. Today, we're taking a close look at Twig, the templating language for craft, with guest Andrew Welch. I'm your host, Leah Alcantara, and I'm joined by my fab co-host,
Emily Lewis.
Today's episode is sponsored by Visual Chefs, a versatile web development agency with expertise in content management system and custom web application development. Through partnerships with designers, agencies, and organizations, Visual Chefs propels the web forward. Visit visualchefs.com to learn more.
Before we get to today's episode, Leigh and I wanted to take a quick moment to thank our listeners who have been so incredibly kind and generous to donate to the show. We added a donate option to controlclickcast.com earlier this year, but I didn't really expect anyone would actually donate. So it was an incredible surprise to get our first donations recently. So Thank you, wonderful listeners. We appreciate all of your support, and your donations go directly to keeping the show going. Now back to today's episode, in which we're going to talk about Twig logic, macros, and more. Twig is, of course, the templating language for one of our favorite CMSs, Craft, and here to give us an intermediate level lesson is Andrew Welch. Andrew has been in the tech business since the ripe old age of 14 when he started designing typefaces for dot matrix printers and later taught himself programming. He has run a successful software company for the past 20 years and now does consulting work to help businesses use technology more effectively through apps, web design, and social media. Welcome to the show, Andrew.
Thank you. It's good to be here. I appreciate you guys having me.
So, Andrew, can you tell our listeners a bit more about yourself?
Sure. I live in upstate New York. I went to college for photojournalism. And I've done absolutely zero with that degree. And you said in the intro, I've been in the tech business for quite some time. I have a wife, two kids, two dogs, and one cat that feels very outnumbered.
Aww. Busy, busy household.
Yeah, I can't believe that it's actually quiet. It's pretty amazing.
So if you started messing around with tech when you were younger, why did you go towards photojournalism, just out of curiosity, when you were in college?
Really two reasons. One, I was probably kind of arrogant back then. I thought they didn't have anything they could teach me. And another is that I kind of wanted to be a little bit more rounded as a person. Mm-hmm. And I thought that doing something that interested me and was a little bit creative might be good for me. And I really enjoyed doing it. So,
and your consulting business now, like what kind of clients do you get a chance to work with?
We have all sorts of interesting clients, from local clients. I've got a friend of mine that runs a very successful high-end business that we've helped him make his business run a whole lot smoother by using technology, to even a poker training website that what they do is they teach people how to play poker. And my client is actually at the World Series right now. He's in the middle of playing the world's biggest tournament at the moment.
Oh, wow.
Oh, exciting.
So let's take a turn and talk about Twig. When did you first learn it? Was it something you were just experimenting with, or did you have a project that specifically required Twig?
So it was probably mid-2014, and I had heard a lot of the buzz about Craft CMS and decided to take a look at it. You know, it wasn't really a matter of choosing Twig. It was more a matter of just looking into Craft and seeing what that was all about. And I got a site configured and installed. It's a charity project that I was doing for a local Chinese school. And I immediately was, the programmer in me was incredibly happy. I have been suffering with Expression Engine that I used for some sites previously. And as a programmer, I found that incredibly frustrating. In fact, a lot of the time I just gave up and wrote stuff in PHP because there were so many gotchas and parsing order issues and just things that randomly didn't work. And it was just very frustrating for me. So Craft using Twig was kind of a breath of fresh air for me, because it actually kind of, the best way to describe it is that it gets out of my way and just lets me do what I want to do, you know, which one of the most frustrating things for me is working on a project when the tool I'm using is hampering me doing what I want to do. So that's how I actually began using it. And I kind of dove in headfirst on it.
So Twig is kind of a pseudo language that translates stuff from PHP. What appeals to you about that versus just like, because you said you're a programmer, what appeals to you about that versus just going straight into the the main language it's parsing.
Yeah, so what Twig does is it's a totally different language, but it translates into PHP, right?
Yes.
Yes, I could do the entire site in PHP, but it's kind of like, you know, why don't you go build your own bicycle? You know,
right.
Because there are a lot of really good bikes out there. You can buy one and you can customize it yourself. And ultimately, any project is about doing something effective for your client.
Right.
You know, I can't bill someone a ridiculous number of hours to build them a custom website when their budget just doesn't allow for that. So that's really why you would use something like this.
And is your experience with Twig mostly or always tied with Craft?
Yeah, I have only really used it with Craft. Twig actually comes from the same developer that made Symfony.
Mm-hmm.
And Symfony is a PHP framework. Twig is used in a number of other places. It's used in a number of small CMSs that you may or may not have heard of. Like Bolt is one of them, and there are a few others.
Yeah, I've heard of that a couple times.
And it's becoming pretty popular for exactly the reason that we just discussed, is that it has a reasonable amount of power without being incredibly difficult to learn. So it kind of hits a nice sweet spot.
How much have you had a chance to use the Craft CMS? You mentioned the charity project. How many projects have you had a chance to work on since then?
I've probably done about 5 projects using Craft with varying degrees of complexity. A recent one that I just did, I got to stop doing these free projects, but it's it's a free project. Well, for now it's free, that I did for myself. And there was actually a pretty heavy amount of Twig code that went into that project.
How often do you find yourself having to, I guess, customize the underlying Twig when you're working with Craft? Is it really just the complexity of the site that dictates that for you?
Yeah, so most of what I've found is that, I mean, there are a couple, like I wrote a couple of Twig filters for a project that I was working on that I needed some very boring functionality for path manipulation for it. But for the most part, I think that Twig out of the box does pretty much what you need it to do for, you know, all the basic website functionality. And it's certainly, you know, much, much more functional than the quote unquote language that Expression Engine uses. And there's a pretty healthy community of developers that have made a whole lot of free plugins as well. There's a whole boatload of free plugins for Twig as well as for Craft that, you know, really do a lot of really cool stuff. And just as an example, so one of the recent projects that I have relies pretty heavily on social media. People will post something to the website, and on our Facebook, Twitter, Google+, and LinkedIn pages, we want that to also be posted there. So I wrote a plugin for that site that uses a service called Buffer.
Right, yeah.
So whenever a new entry is posted, it automatically gets put in the queue and it goes right up on the social media accounts. So, I mean, that's kind of an example of functionality that you would want to extend in it. It's obviously never going to be built into the language itself to do that, but it's pretty easy to do plugins like that for Craft.
Forgive my ignorance, because Leia's the Craft developer on our team. So why would you not have that be part of the core of Craft? Is it because it would rely on APIs that are too variable? Like LinkedIn, I imagine it changes its API at least, what, once a year or something like that?
Yeah, and it requires specific services too, right? Like it requires Buffer. And really, a good CMS is really good at what it does, which is being a content management system and with other things layered on top of that, right? So you've got Craft, which has layered on top of it has Twig, and then they allow for plugins to do functionality that are going to be specific to every site. And if you end up including the kitchen sink in a project like that, first of all, it becomes unmanageable. But second of all, it takes it away from being really good at what it should be really good at, which is being a content management system. So, you know, they're doing it the right way in that they're making it very extensible. So if people want to do the type of thing that I want to do, I can.
So when you first started diving into Craft, what were the resources back then? And what are the resources now that you look toward to get more familiar with Twig?
So for Twig itself, you know, I went to the Sensio Labs page. They're the people that make Twig, and they've got a nice reference there. And thankfully, Twig is an easy enough language that it's really not that hard to pick up. Now, I realize that I'm coming at it from a little bit different angle than a lot of people might be in that, you know, I'm more of a programmer. If you're coming at it and you're a designer and maybe you've done, you know, a little bit of scripting here or there, I mean, it'll take you a little bit to pick it up, but it really isn't that bad. And the nice thing about it is that you can use it for very basic things, but it's there waiting for you when you want to do something more complicated.
I have to say that when I first started picking up Craft, and you sent this link to us too, Brandon Kelly's little gist on GitHub.
Right.
That kind of translated just the ideas of Expression Engine.
Right.
Which, you know, they're just universal ideas, like what are comments, what are conditionals, what are loops. But sometimes you need to define these terms first and foremost, because what one thing means in a CMS might mean something else in another. And just trying to figure out, like, you know, how does that translate? I thought that particular resource, as a very, very beginner, non-programmer, front-end developer person, that translation was, I thought, really, really useful.
Yeah, and that's, if you're coming from Expression Engine, then it's really helpful. And if you're coming from something else, then it probably doesn't help you at all. Probably isn't that useful at all.
Am I correct? Isn't there a really active Slack? In fact, that's where you and Leia first connected about Twig?
Yeah, that's Slack is pretty awesome. It's for anyone who hasn't seen it, it's basically an online chat. Slack is great a resource, and the awesome thing about it is that you can connect directly to the guys that wrote Craft, right? I mean,
yes.
Brandon Kelly is in there. A bunch of guys are in there.
Brad.
Yeah, Brad is, he's always there. And not just the developer, or not just the people who made Craft, but there are also a number of other developers that do various things. You know, you may have very good designers, you may have people that are writing plugins that are all, you know, pretty helpful in terms of when you've got a question, you know? So a lot of times I just, if I have a question about something, I'll dump it in there. And if I'm idle, you know, I'll see if there are any questions for me to answer in there. I think, yeah, that's how Leia and I met. She had a question and I said, all right, let's see if I can answer this.
Yeah, I would have to say double down on that Craft Slack channel. It's pretty amazing because everyone's really enthusiastic to help. And it doesn't matter whether your question is basic. Like, people are pretty much, you know, even if you've got a simple question, people are willing to give you suggestions, even if it doesn't even have anything to do with Craft or Twig. Like, I had a HT access question and someone was like, here you go. This is the answer.
Excellent. So let's go ahead and get a little more focused about some Craft specifics, some intermediate Twig stuff. So Andrew, can you tell us what are some of the Craft-specific Twig functions that developers need to be aware of to take advantage, to make the most of what they're building?
You know, Twig itself is pretty deep in that there you can use it just to do simple for loops, you know, and it also has some pretty good array functionality and more complicated stuff. The things that are, there are about a dozen or so functions that are specific to Craft. I think probably some of the most useful ones are the localization ones. Now, if you're never working on a site that requires localization, obviously it's not really going to matter to you. But they have extended Twig to have currency, number, and time functions that are all localized. And I've worked on a couple of sites that actually require that. And they also have translation functions built into it. So if you ever find where you're actually hard coding some text into your Twig templating, you just put pipe and then T for translate, and it will automatically look into a translation file to see what the translation is in whatever language the user happens to be using, which, you know, if you're working on an international site, that is pretty damn cool.
Wow. Just the pipe and T, and it just automatically guesses.
No. You have to manually put the translations in. And it's basically just a file that has a list of key value pairs, you know, like hello is hola, you know, or hello is for Chinese ni hao, you know, whatever.
Right.
But that's really useful if you're doing localization stuff. Even if you're not doing localization stuff, they did extend, they've got a number of additional filters that have to do with arrays. For instance, you can group together things based on key, which is really useful. There's an index of, and there are a few other kind of pretty useful things that, to me, what it looks like is they were working on Craft, and Craft is built on a PHP layer called Yi, okay? And then built on top of that is Twig, and I think they were working on Craft, and as they were doing it, They're like, wow, you know, it would be really useful if we had this. So they added it.
Right,
and, you know, they're building, they ate their own dog food and they were building their own site with their own tools. So as they were building their site, they're like, oh, you know, we really could use the ability to do this. And so there's a smorgasbord of additional filters that they added probably during that exact development process.
So, Andrew, can you talk a little bit more about these filters? You're saying this is just a way to, like, group output. Is that correct?
For the translation?
Or for anything. I mean, I guess the filters, are they only relevant for localization, or would it be relevant for any type of content?
They could potentially be relevant for any type of content. The way filters work in Craft is that, think of them as a pipeline, right? So you'll have a statement or an expression, and then a pipe, and then a filter. And the text that goes down through there goes through that filter, right? So if you put %hello in quotes, pipe T or translate. The hello text is piped, you know, it goes down, you read it from left to right, and it flows down through the translation. So, and you can chain together any number of filters that you want, right? So you could do, you know, some variable pipe replace, and you could do a search and replace on it, and then pipe that to the translation, and you can do it for an infinite number of things. So filters in general can be used absolutely anywhere. The translation specific ones, yeah, I mean, you probably would just use them when you're localizing something, but it works pretty nicely.
And you're about to mention one of the filters you like is the kebab filter.
Right. I like the kebab filter just because I like the name. I mean, it's just kind of cool. I mean, I love kebabs too. So, but basically all that does is it translates quoted text into kind of like what you see in the URLs for pages, where everything's lowercase, but there are dashes where there are spaces. Honestly, I like it because of the name and I love kebabs, but other...
Yeah, filters can be used for a various number of things of just applying something to text. You know, if you're just going to like strip it down to its bare minimum. So Emily, like for example, if you want to strip HTML tags, that's one of the most basic common, you know, filters when you have an excerpt and you just want to make sure that that excerpt doesn't have like paragraph tags around it, then you would just do like pipe strip tags around that content, and then it's going to just take out all the HTML, and that's, you know, that's a sample of a filter. And or if you've got multiple pieces of content that you're stringing together in the loop, you can actually like join these pieces of text together if you wanted to, or you can merge certain things. So there's just like just so many things you could do with filters. I think that's one of the most powerful things about Craft for me.
Yeah. I mean, just as an example, I'm looking at some code that I did, and it takes the name from a matrix block and then it pipes it to the raw filter, which says, give me just the raw data from this, no translation. Then it pipes it to a twig filter called Hacksaw, which is basically an excerpt filter. And then it pipes it to the escape filter, which escape encodes it for JavaScript, right? So it's a kind of like this chain of things. You can think of it as a conveyor belt. You know, it starts here. And then as it moves to each filter, something is done to it. And then in the end, it's output.
Excellent. So aside from the filters that you mentioned, and specifically that the localization filter and other localization features that come in it, are there any other Twig functionality that developers should definitely look deeper into?
There's plenty of really, really cool Twig functionality. I think macros can be really cool. Macros basically are shortcuts. So let's say there are things that you find yourself typing repeatedly when you're coding something, or you notice in your code that there's something that is being repeated often. That's the perfect case for writing a macro for it. So as an example, one of the sites that I wrote deals with currency, and it can be in any number of different denominations, right? So I wrote a little macro that it looks at the currency that the listing is in versus the currency that the user has said, this, you know, this is my currency. And if they're different, it uses the popover functionality of Bootstrap so that if you mouse over it, it does a real-time translation of that currency, right? So, you know, there's a 1,000 euro might be listed there. And if you mouse over it and your currency is in US dollars, it will show you the currency in US dollars, right? And it uses a plugin called Currency that goes out and grabs the latest currency conversions and does all that. But that's something that is, you know, the expression is probably, you know, three lines long that does it. And I don't need to see that everywhere in my code, right? So what I do is I just, I wrote a macro, which is essentially a function called currency tooltip, right? And I just pass it in the number and the person's currency. It figures out whether the currency is different. And if it is different, it spits out the HTML needed to create the popover. And then in my actual code, all I put in there is macro.currencyTooltip. And that's it. I don't have to see. Otherwise, this three lines of code would be repeated anywhere, and it would be really, really hard to edit. And that's really when you use macros, is when you see something that's being used over and over again, and you want to simplify the code that you're looking at.
So you described this sort of currency popover. Are there any other examples you could give, sort of real world, of where a macro might... I mean, obviously, when you're streamlining your code so you don't repeat yourself as much, but maybe some real-world examples?
Yeah, so another real-world example, for instance, might be a form field, right? Because in your form fields, you might be having a number of specific classes in them, and it would be really convenient if you could just say something like, you know, macro field equals text input, you know, and maybe pass in a name. And then it would spit out the HTML for generating that specific thing. And the other nice thing about it is, you know, I'm sure you have both done this and I've done this, where you've got, you know, a huge entry form and then a designer or someone else comes back and says, oh, no, you know, I really would like it to look like this. And you have to go back and you have to edit every single field to change the class or to, you know, change some specific thing about it. If you put the bottleneck in a macro, you change it in one place and it's updated everywhere. You know, so it kind of spares you from doing that manual or search and replacing on it. But really, that's another real-world example of it. But it's anywhere that you find yourself doing something repetitively. And also, I use it for code readability issues, right? So I want to be able to look at something and have it be nice and clean and I can understand what's going on. If you've got a ridiculous number of classes or really convoluted logic in the HTML, it's really kind of nice to separate that away into a macro so that it's actually readable. Because I think one of your recent guests said this, and it's definitely true, the person who is most likely to be going back and reading your code is you, right?
Right,
so
yeah, exactly.
So don't make your life difficult for yourself, you know?
So Leia, to put you on a spot, sorry, but have you had a chance to use a macro in Craft yet?
Yeah, actually. And Andrew actually helped me out with one of them. But before I talk about what Andrew helped me with, the simplest macro is actually part of like the default templates. And it's to choose whether a navigation element is active or not. So it's just basically a macro basically checking the first conditional segment to see if it matches the navigation URL. And, you know, if I had to write the conditional on every single situation, that would be just the really, really long, repetitive code for every single line. But with a macro, that just makes it really, really clean to just specify the URL and then specify, for example, something like macros.is_active, and then you repeat what the URL is to match the definition, then it just makes it really, really clean whether that navigation is active or not. But that being said, you know, that was the example given in the learning templates. Mm-hmm. And I didn't quite get it until I started trying to figure out what to do with this particular layout we designed for a client. This particular layout that we designed for a client kind of had a lot of conditionals based on how it will look. So this particular client sells books and they will have future books later on, but they're not released yet. Now, we didn't want to just have a row where, you know, a simple design solution for this would have made our life easier if we just made like a row of like, okay, there's a new book. It's just going to have a new row and it's going to look exactly as the same as the first row.
That's too boring. Can't do that. Come on.
Exactly. And that would have been the easiest thing. But no, we had to be like, if there's two books, it'll look like this. And if it's three books, we're going to stack two columns and then the first row is going to be a full column. But if there's $4, then we're going to make them, you know, two columns over top two columns. But if it's $5, so in the end, we had to figure out like, okay, so it's easy to write in the HTML, these just raw HTML, the classes for this to work. However, if we want this to be automatically outputted via CMS based on the number of books and what row it is, we had to really think about, well, what does this actually mean? When does this full class show up versus the two column class to show up? And then how does it know when to end the div? So it's not even just about, okay, let's figure out how to put this opening class. We also have to figure out how to close the div so to end the row in the first place. So this was a perfect opportunity for me to go to Craft Slack room and basically be like, I have no clue what I'm doing. Here's the design. And can someone help me figure this out? What was interesting is that before we even dove into perhaps Craft solutions, you know, just talking through what the actual functionality needs to be, like how it's supposed to look, we had to actually really figure that out because, you know, some people were like, okay, so do all even rows need to be two columns? Well, that's simple. We could make a CSS, you know, or conditional that if it's even rows, it's going to be doing this. And it's like, no. Sometimes there's a situation where even if it's an even, quote unquote, even count, it's going to look different.
Yeah, I fully believe that if on a project you're working on, you have not banged your head on the table, you're probably not trying hard enough, okay? I like that you're doing it this way. And I also am very used to, my wife has her master's in computer graphic design. So we work on a team on some of this stuff.
Yeah.
And she will hand me designs and I'll just put my head in my forehead going, oh, God, you have no idea what you're making me do. So anyway, I appreciate that you went for this. Go ahead.
Yeah. And so it was interesting when I was talking just the problem through on Craft Slack. And I'm sure most of our listeners will probably find this, that just the act of talking it out really solidifies what's happening. Because, you know, as a designer, I just design something because I think, you know, it works to solve the design problem and it just looks great or whatever.
Yeah, sure. But don't think about the work you're making for us. That's fine.
Yeah, exactly.
Make whatever pretty little design you want. Go ahead.
Exactly. But since I'm also a craft developer, I'm like, oh, shit, now I have to
I have to
make this work. And it was interesting that some people were even providing CSS-only solutions like, why don't you use Last Child? Why don't you use, you know, those kind of things? And there were some solutions that if my design, that is what I wanted, it would have worked. But because of the logic that we had decided for ourselves and made it, you know, super difficult, a CSS-only solution wouldn't work. So Andrew came back and was like, okay, we really need to define each of these rows as specific layouts. So we would have a featured layout, which would be the featured book that's always at the top. And then we had to figure out what a single row layout looked like and then defined the beginning of the double layout, like the two columns. And then we had to figure out what the end of the double layout would be. And we decided in regular terms that would be the right side of the double layout. So just even having that language of like, okay, this is a single layout, therefore it's the full row. Then this is the double layout, but this is the left side, so we're going to call it left double layout. You know, those kind of things, it helps you really kind of figure out the logic of the particular layout. So that was kind of like the first thing. The next thing was, well, since this is going to be repeated based on the number of like entries and stuff, it made sense that we had to figure out macros to like actually apply these, the opening divs and classes and the closing divs. But after that, like I was a little bit lost.
So when you're talking about layouts, you're using it in the truest sense of the form, the way it's laid out. That's not like a twig term or something like that.
No, okay. It's like literally we named the macro. Mm-hmm. The macro itself is called featured layout. It could have been called row. It could have been called just featured. But in order for us to like actually understand what's happening, it just made sense to like have those particular layouts.
So, Andrew, how do you work through that logic? I mean, obviously, you're a programmer, so you have that foundational process. But what is your process? Is that something that someone else can develop over time?
You know, that's a really kind of tough question. I guess what I do, you know, I'm doing it so long that actually expressing what I do might be hard.
right.
But what I try to do is just break the project down, kind of like what Leah was talking about. I'm trying to figure out, okay, at its base level, what is going on here? And break it down into kind of like a cooking recipe or simple steps of, okay, this is what's going on. Now that I know, now that I have it broken down, how do I build it up into actually programming it? And I don't really know how to explain it other than that. You know, that's just kind of mentally how I work. I dissect a problem. First, you have to understand the problem, right? You have to understand exactly what it is and then get it down to its base level and then figure out how to solve it. And it's just kind of something that I've been doing it for a really long time.
So it's practice, really.
Yeah. And I mean, that logic thing, what we ended up doing was we created the macros. But what Andrew also helped me was also consider the logic of when these macros showed up based on the loop. So originally we were like, okay, this is an even row versus an odd row. So we were figuring out those indexes and based on even odd conditionals. However, what actually ended up working was math. So we decided, like, for example, in this particular case, we had an if conditional basically saying, if the loop is divisible by 3, show this macro. If it's divisible by 2, show this macro. And if it's the last of the entire loop, show this macro. And if none of that works, here's the main thing you better show. So because the even and odd conditional, it just wasn't working because based on how we actually wanted the layout to go, like, again, like if it was
you did
like
it to
really
yourself.
Fine, yeah, exactly. Like if we really wanted to be like, if it's an even row, we're going to put 2 columns. If it's an odd row, we'll put a row, like a full column. That wasn't how our layout worked. We actually had different layouts based on different conditions because it didn't look good otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
Once we got past the fact that it was an even or odd row, we're like, actually, if we divide the actual number of entries, like what where it is in the loop, that would actually show the specific layout that we really need.
I just did the coding for it on the fly. I didn't test any of it. So I was surprised as anyone that it actually worked.
Right.
But yeah, from what I recall from it, you know, part of it was basically just having the flow correct in terms of, you know, if it's this number of things, show this, and then where it would default down to the right thing. Right. So, and that was kind of how the logic of it worked. And it was just the simplest way to solve it from a programmatic point of view. There was another solution a guy put in the chat that was a CSS solution that that worked as well, from what I understand.
Yeah, but in the end, like, I had to do it the craft way because we had more conditionals based on the classes.
Yes.
And so, like, if
you
it
chose
was a
my
CSS,
solution. Yay. Okay.
Yeah, the CSS only wouldn't have worked because there was some styling stuff and I needed to have certain classes in certain places. So that's why we chose that solution in the end. And, you know, I just want to point out, Twig can do math.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really, really important that some CMS templating languages
that shall remain nameless
that don't do that as easily or at all.
Damn you, Expression Engine. Wait a minute. Are they a sponsor?
Not for this episode.
Okay, good.
Well, you know, here's the thing. When you're getting into this sort of custom stuff, regardless of what CMS you're working with, it becomes increasingly challenging. Out of the box, working with something in its core functionality, Expression Engine for me has been a fantastic system, and Craft has been as well. I mean, I think, Leah, am I correct? This is the most extensive we've had to sort of tweak something for a Craft project so far.
Yeah, and that was because we had designed a solution that was complex.
Yeah.
There's no we.
Yeah.
You did that.
Yeah. Don't try and drag us down into your mess.
I voiced my concerns during the front-end development phase.
But it's pretty.
And you said, what the hell are you doing?
No, my problem is I do it. I do all of it and spend way too much time. And then I tell her there was a problem.
Yeah. You make a really good point, though, that, you know, I love Craft because it gets out of my way. And, you know, I've experienced as a programmer and I can just do what I want to do. But ultimately, CMS systems are just a tool to get the job done. Right.
Yeah.
So if you know, you don't need anything like that and you just want a turnkey solution, you can look at, you know, using some of the other CMS systems, and it may be perfect for you. One of the things that I try to do with all the sites that I work on, and this kind of, you know, OCD behavior probably is what makes me good at this stuff, is that I try to make sure that the site does exactly what they want, right? Which I need specific control to do that. Mm-hmm. And also that it does really, really well in like Google PageSpeed Insights and some of those other testing tools. It's not the case with Expression Engine. You can do all this stuff in Expression Engine, but some other CMS systems that are almost too easy and too turnkey, like WordPress, for instance, you're just never going to be able to do well in some of those external testing tools, just because it's a black box and it just does what it's going to do. Mm-hmm. And there are certain things you can do to try and change that. But that's really why I enjoy Craft, is I try to work on projects that the customer wants something done incredibly well and they're willing to pay for it, right? And I like doing stuff like that. You know, I like trying to spend that extra 5 hours getting something just perfect. But I recognize that's not the case for every project. You know, not every project it's necessary or there's a budget to do something like that.
Right. But, you know, just to acknowledge that your point is equally valid, knowing that what you're building has the capacity to support something later that might be more extensive is also good to know as well.
Yeah, that is a very good point.
So what would you advise someone who is a beginner with Twig, with Craft, sort of level up to get to an intermediate or an advanced level?
The first thing I would say is just start using it. And I realize that that sounds, you know, incredibly obvious, but realistically, the way that you learn things is by doing, right? And the way that I learned Twig is just by looking at documentation and trying to figure stuff out. There are some really good explanations and tutorials on Twig and how to use it. And I would also say don't be intimidated, because you can just approach a project and look up the functionality that you need as you go, right? I mean, you don't have to sit down and pretend that you're taking a formal course in Twig, you know? But I do think it does help to look it over and see what tools are available to you before you start something, because you may have a particular problem to solve and not be aware that Twig has this great function that will do exactly what you want. So one of the first things I did is I just went to the Senseo Labs. If you Google Twig, you'll find their page. It's the first page. And I just looked over the functions that they had and, you know, briefly clicked on them to see what they did, so that when I was working on a project and I had a problem to solve, I'd be like, oh, I remember, you know, reading about that it has a function for X, Y, and Z. And there's some really, really cool functionality. And I think that's a reasonable way to do it, is just give yourself a little bit of an overview of what it can do and then dive in and start doing something with it.
Yeah, I was just wondering about, like, just the diving in part. Like, that's really planning a site, you know, planning a Craft build. Do you have a documentation workflow? Do you do sketches or diagrams? Like, how do you work through planning, you know, a site or a Twig problem?
So it's a few different problems, at least for me. So for the user experience type of thing, I use wireframes because there's a reason I study photography. I can't draw or I can't design. I know what looks good and I can take a picture of it, but I can't create it. It's pretty awful. My 6-year-old son draws better than I do, I swear to God. So for the user experience type of stuff, yes, I do layouts. For the actually figuring out the underpinnings of the site and how I'm going to arrange and do all that kind of stuff, I tend to work really well that I kind of frame the problem in my mind and I usually just kind of let it sit there. And somehow my brain kind of figures it out so that, you know, in a day or two, I've got a really good idea of how to approach this. If it's a really complicated thing, then I'll do something with, you know, bullet pointed lists to figure out how to structure stuff. And, you know, I think that's a really good way, kind of like Leah was talking about, verbalizing the problem helps you really bring it into focus. Writing down the problem, too, in that, you know, outline form also can really help, too. And it's, I try to use tools that are lightweight, right? You don't want to spend 10 hours making a really fancy design document for something that just doesn't justify it. So an outline view is fine. Now, obviously, if you have to present it to clients, that's a different story, but the client doesn't usually care what the technical underpinnings are.
Right.
You know, they're more interested in the user experience. This is what it's going to look like, that type of thing. But really, for the most part, I try and think the problem through and just let it sit. And occasionally also do an outline view of exactly what's going to be where.
Yeah, I think for us, we spend a lot of time not doing any formal planning of our CMS builds. And then we started doing some planning. And for us, it was really just sort of documenting, you know, I can't speak to craft, but I can speak to like Expression Engine, documenting the templates, the channels, the custom fields that we're going to have, just sort of sketching it out literally on paper. And when I say sketch, I don't mean with like diagrams. I mean with just words. And I think, Leia, you're doing something similar with craft. And I feel like for us, and probably because, you know, Leia's the craft dev, we both do EE dev, we like having a document that both of us can refer to and sort of chime in our own thoughts on something,
right,
rather than just marinating on it. That's what we would do in the past. And always, I always found, at least for myself, as I was getting into the development, I'd realize, oh, this what I'm doing right now is a lot more efficient than what I did yesterday. I should redo that thing I did yesterday to be more reflective of what I'm doing right now, kind of thing.
Yeah, so I do actually, I should have mentioned this. One of the things that I do for every site or every project, because it's not always a website, but for every project that I work on is I make a wiki for it.
Oh. Mm.
And the reason I do that is twofold. One is I consider it kind of the user's manual for the site. So that when I hand it over to the client, I can be like, look, here,
oh, you know, okay.
Here is your site. Here is, you know, because what I found is that most of the clients, you know, they may not remember their login passwords. They don't know how to get in, you know, here. So I create a wiki, and I use, my preference is Doku Wiki, D-O-K-U Wiki. It's really simple to install, and there's a responsive Bootstrap theme that you can put in it, and I use that because I've got a number of clients, such as the guy who runs the poker training, that he lives off of his phone. So if it's not a mobile responsive wiki, he's never going to look at it. But I document in there, you know, all the plugins that a site uses, all the passwords, and I also do design documents in there, right? So if we do like a white paper of features, and from a collaborative point of view, a wiki is really, really ideal. Because it's really lightweight. You know, you can just type, you know, you don't have to do anything real fancy. And it saves every revision of what you're working on. So if you want to roll back, you can. And multiple people can edit it and add their input to it at the same time. And it's also nice because it's in a central place, right? I always do, like, if the website I'm doing is foo.com, I do wiki.foo.com. And so every site that I have, there's a wiki there. And they can also do fun things like, you know, only people that have an account can view it, but you can also set up access permissions so that, you know, only certain people can see the passwords page. And I do that in the design phase, kind of doing what you guys are talking about in documenting stuff. And then I also do it just documenting everything that I do. And I found that the clients love it because I say, hey, look, you know, here's your owner's manual. Because a lot of times, you know, to the clients, the website is a black box and they don't know what the hell is going on with it. And they like the idea that they're getting this actual owner's manual for their site that explains everything that's going on and where it is. And I also found that it's really useful for me because I'm the one who's most likely going to go back and work on this thing. I can look at it and say, oh, okay, that's where that is. And this is how that works. And I find it really, really helpful. And a wiki is just a great medium because you can't hurt it. You know, the client can get in there and make edits, and if they screw it up, you just roll it back.
Nice. Yeah. I like that. I think that's the first time we've heard of that idea, especially as like a owner's manual. It's great.
Yeah, it's really, it's very, very easy to set up. And once you know how to set it up once, it's really not a big deal to replicate it everywhere. And I even do it for projects that I work on for myself. You know, I document where all this stuff is because I come back in a year.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I'm going to be like, oh, past me. Thank you for putting that there. You know, I didn't know. I forgot what that was, you know.
So before we get to the end of the episode, can you talk about some of the most common Twig mistakes you've seen that people should avoid?
I think that the most common mistakes that people make are, first, really think through the problem before you put any code down and really understand what it is you're doing because, you know, otherwise it's kind of like trying to build a house without any kind of floor plans. You know, you'll be tacking stuff together and you'll be like, oh, crap, we wanted to put a pool over there. You know, we didn't plan for any of that. You know, let's tear it apart. So really, you know, think through the problem, even if it's pretty simple. And I would say probably one of the other mistakes I see people making is not commenting their code. Mm-hmm. Even if it looks pretty simple, I think it makes sense to comment it. And again, you're doing yourself a favor because you're the one who's probably going to go back and look at it. And I think another common mistake, I guess you would call it, is people tend to just write their code and then never go back to profile it and optimize it and make sure it's actually doing something really efficiently. For, you know, a lot of people, they're like, okay, I got it done. Phew, thank God it actually works. You know, I'm never going to look at it again. But there definitely are performance concerns that you should be taking a look at. And all it really takes is turning on the dev mode in Craft, or, you know, every CMS is something analogous to that, and checking out what the performance profile of the code is like, and can this be done more efficiently? And if I see code that's really, really inefficient, a lot of times they've thought about the problem wrong. So if they spend a little bit more time up front before they actually typed anything, they probably would have avoided that entirely. But I would say really that's kind of the most common mistakes that I've seen. Probably another one would be just not knowing what tools are available to you and doing something in a really hard way just because you're not aware of a certain twig filter that will do X, Y, or Z for you, which kind of begs for the case of just spending a little bit of time, like I mentioned earlier, going over what's in your toolbox, you know, and what kind of functionality there is there.
I feel like that answers our last question, which is what your final best practice tips are, unless you have some final thoughts.
Yeah. You know, I think, unfortunately, I just went over kind of what best practices are. It's basically is, you know, think about the problem first, comment your code as you're doing it, and, you know, turn dev mode on and attempt to optimize it afterwards. Really important to get it working first and then try to optimize it later. And also super, super important to really understand the problem before you try to code for it, because otherwise you can end up with something that's really, really inefficient just by design, not because you coded anything wrong.
All right. So before we finish up, we've got our rapid fire 10 questions so our listeners can get to know you a bit better.
Oh, God. Let me drink a little coffee. Hold on. All right. I'm ready.
All right. Question number one. Android or iOS?
iOS.
If you were stranded on a desert island and can only bring three things, what would you bring?
My wife and my kids.
Perfect.
Wait a minute. Well, that's a terrible answer. Because now, now I'm stranding them on the island too, right?
It's a selfish answer, but you're not the first.
Wow, that was a really selfish answer. That was horrible. Okay, sorry. Go ahead.
What's your favorite TV show?
I don't really watch a whole lot of TV. That's really going to be hard. I don't know. Probably some nature programs. Planet Earth, maybe. I don't know.
All right. What's your favorite dessert?
What is not my favorite dessert? That's really the question. I like strawberry shortcake a lot.
What profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
Well, I really wanted to be a photojournalist, and that's why I went to school for it. But I was convinced, and this is, you know, I'm dating myself, but this is back in the 90s. I was lucky enough to know a guy named Rick Smolin, who was a pretty famous photojournalist for National Geographic. And he actually came to my school to give a talk, and you know, we went out for a beer and talked for a little while. And he did like some of the Day in the Life series books, like he did From Alice to Ocean and a lot of the Day in the Life of Vietnam, you know, that type of thing. So he was basically rock star photojournalist, and he told me, you know, hey, don't think you're going to be me. And he didn't mean that. He didn't mean that from an arrogant point of view at all. He was just saying, he's like, look, I got incredibly lucky to be doing this, you know, and it's very unlikely that you're going to do it. And thank God he gave me that speech, because that was around the time that smartphones really were coming into being, you know, later on. And the photojournalism profession just died. I mean, it is as dead as a doornail right now.
So does that mean you wouldn't want to try it? Because that's my next question. What profession would you not like to try?
No, I would love to try it if someone would actually pay me to do it. But I don't think anyone's going to pay me to do it. That's the problem.
You know? All right. So what profession would you not like to try?
I don't think I would like to clean sewers. I think I would really not like that at all.
What's the latest article or blog post you've read?
Oh, God. It's really boring. So it is optimizing your websites using Varnish.
Right.
Yeah, I know, right? And Varnish, I think they're called Edge Includes. Yeah, that is what they're called. And that's, it's really boring.
Probably not for our listeners, though.
Yeah, they'll be like, yes, bookmarked.
Yeah, sorry.
If you could have a superpower, what would it be?
Wow, that's tough. I mean, there are a lot of things that I would like on a practical level, but just for fun, I'd like to be able to fly. I think that would be awesome.
What music do you like to work to?
I listen to a lot of classic rock stuff, you know. It depends on my mood. If I'm doing, you know, like for marathon training and stuff like that, I will do things like Jane's Addiction and Nirvana and really kind of, you know, go kill 'em kind of music. And if I'm just coding while I'm working at home, you know, some of that, but the Pink Floyd and some other more mellow music.
All right, last question. Cats or dogs?
Yeah, I'm definitely a dog person.
Well, that's all the time we have for today. Thanks for joining us, Andrew.
All right, thank you for having me.
In case our listeners want to follow up with you, where can they find you online?
Look for me in Slack chat. How about that? And craftcms.slack.com. And my username is Kalwat, K-H-A-L-W-A-T, which is a Malay word.
All right, thanks again, Andrew.
Thank you.
Control Click is produced by Bright Umbrella, a web services agency obsessed with happy clients. Today's podcast would not be possible without the support of this episode's sponsor. Thank you, Visual Chefs.
We'd also like to thank our partners, Arcus Tech, DevOT, and EE Insider.
And thanks to our listeners for tuning in. If you want to know more about Control Click, make sure you follow us on Twitter at Control Click Cast or visit our website, controlclickcast.com. And if you like this episode, please give us a review on Stitcher or iTunes or both.
Don't forget to tune in to our next episode when we're going to talk accessibility, the basics and essentials with Gregory Tarnoff. Be sure to check out our schedule on our site, controlclickcast.com/schedule, for more upcoming topics.
This is Leah Alcantara
and Emily Lewis
signing off for Control Clickcast. See you next time.
Cheers.